Hello and welcome to a special Thanksgiving edition of the Four Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusek, and in this episode, my very special guest is Adam Shupak. Adam's a senior writer with GolfWeek, GolfWeek.com, as well as USA Today Sports. And in the podcast you're about to hear, Adam and I talk about, with only one PGA Tour event left in 2020, how the tour has handled the COVID-19 pandemic and kept professional golf alive and seemingly doing pretty well. We also talk at length about the Match 3, the made-for-TV event that's taking place on Friday that's going to put Phil Mickelson and Charles Barkley up against Peyton Manning and Steph Curry. Then Adam and I discuss the question of adding off weeks to the PGA Tour's calendar. And finally, we debate the idea of the window of opportunity for Ricky Fowler to finally win a major championship. It might be closing. All that, and we also reveal which plate at the Thanksgiving table is each of our MVP. So stick around. Get stronger, hit longer, and end pain with Golf Forever. Created by Justin Leonard and co-author of the Younger Next Year Back book, Dr. Jeremy James, Golf Forever is the take anywhere online golf fitness program that helps you build a body primed for golf. It's simple, safe, and it works. At home, in the gym, on the golf course, Golf Forever's easy to follow exercises, warm-up routines, and course management videos will help you play your best pain-free. Sign up today at golfforever.com and use promo code GOLFWEEK for a free 14-day trial. And now I'd like to once again welcome Adam Shupak to the Four Press Podcast. Adam, happy Thanksgiving. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, cool. Have you got all the turkey and all the trimmings purchased? Is all the shopping for the big day done?
Not yet. We still got a few things to do there, but my wife's got her mom's secret recipe for the stuffing, so we should be good.
The stuffing is really the MVP of the Thanksgiving dinner. I know some people, I mean, the turkey is great because it's pretty much, I mean, we have it on deli stuff all the time, but I mean, who the heck roasts a turkey and does that? The stuffing, though, is the MVP. That brings it. I realize the gravy at our house, at least especially with the kids, makes it palatable. My wife and I like to cook, but what is your favorite portion of the Thanksgiving meal?
I like dessert. I think I like dessert.
Nice.
Pumpkin pie, an apple pie, you know, some ice cream.
Do they have pumpkin pies and apple pies and stuff like that in Florida?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Come on.
Well, I lived for 2 years in Florida. No, I mean, indoor plumbing and the whole bit. I mean, I lived in the Florida Keys for 2 winters, and it was strange to be in a place where they put holiday lights on palm trees and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you kind of get into it, and especially after freezing my ass off in Canton, New York at St. Lawrence University, it was great to be in someplace warm in the winter months. But I always, this is the holiday more than any other that I equate with cold weather, the Northeast, like, you know, the whole Norman Rockwell bit. And the idea of bringing out the Thanksgiving turkey and all the trimmings and all that kind of stuff, which is great, having family around, which unfortunately, this year is probably not the wisest move for a lot of people, but when it's 85 degrees and muggy, is it still warm down in Florida? You guys still catching that, or is it cooled down a bit?
It's perfect right now. We got a morning tea time on Thursday. That's all I'm going to say. So life is good.
we do not. It's supposed to be rainy and lousy and everything, but this is my favorite holiday. It doesn't matter which religion you are, what your background is. If you're here, if you're in the U.S., we have much to be thankful for. It's been a pretty lousy year. I think we can all agree on that. 2020 is not what we wanted it to be, but we're here, and there's hope for the future. There's the vaccines and all that stuff. It sounds like are extremely promising. We've got a lot of challenges to get that stuff out to everybody, but I am confident, as I think a lot of other people might be, that 21 could certainly be better than 20. And here's to it. From a golf standpoint, you had an opportunity, as did I, to go out to a couple of events, but you went to the last PGA Tour event, last one that we had last week, the RSM Classic. What's been your take on how the PGA Tour has managed this season? I mean, from the first event that you went to, which I believe you said was FedEx, out in Memphis, to what effectively is now the end of calendar year 2020. What's been your impression about how the tour has handled the COVID pandemic and trying to manage that?
Well, I think they've done a really good job overall. You know, just the fact that we've gotten this far, The number of cases was very low. I think there were three players last week who tested positive, which was the most we've had in quite some time. And you think back to when you were at Hartford, I mean, it felt like things were on the edge in terms of keeping things going. And we had very few cases with the players and caddies. So I think that's been a real positive. They've gotten to the point where they're doing pro-ams again. That we've had a couple of events in Bermuda and Houston where they've allowed limited fans, and there wasn't any spectators other than VIPs, and I'm not even sure who was at the RSM last week, but there were probably around 150 to 200 people circling the 18th green on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that did bother me though at that event was I felt like there were way too many people not wearing masks. I don't know what was going on, but the PGA Tour, you know, they've gone even stricter. The media, you know, we have to have a mask on while we're walking the course, which personally, I'm not sure I fully understand that one. I think we're okay out in the open like that, but they've been very strict with us in terms of having to stay 6 feet away. We can't just go up and approach players. We can't go on the practice putting green or the practice range anymore. So our access has been limited. And it just, to me, it was, you know, since they're really made things stricter, I was surprised that there were so many of the people that were on site and were around the golf tournament did not have a mask on, and nobody seemed to have a problem with that. I think that's still a bit of a work in progress. And I do think of all the sports, golf's in the best place to bring back fans since it is an outdoor sport. And, you know, I think we're just going to have to monitor things. I think the PGA Tour's being very precautious about how many fans they let back and knowing that, you know, the winter time period could be a resurgence and we're already seeing it. But mm-hmm. I think that's an issue right now. What have you felt?
You know, I think it's and there's a lot of meat on the bone with this one. But number one, one of the challenges that the Tour has innately is that it goes from place to place. You're not going to put the entire PGA Tour in a bubble and play every event at one venue, which the NBA showed that they could do at least their playoffs in. And Major League Baseball tried to do a smaller version of that by having neutral site venues. And so they limited travel, etc. That's not going to happen. So that right off the bat could make it challenging to make sure that the players and the caddies do the right thing, which they've shown that they're capable of doing. But when you introduce pro-ams, limited numbers of spectators, and you're going from region to region, which may be hotter or slightly safer on average, that to me innately makes things a little bit more challenging. I agree. I was, as you noted, Travelers and wore a mask pretty much all the time when I was around everybody. But once I would walk away from people and I was strolling a fairway and I'm, you know, 200 yards from anybody else, I would take the mask off and breathe in some fresh air. And I did the same thing when I was at Northern Trust at TPC Boston and the same thing at the U.S. Open. But at all of those events, whenever anybody was in proximity with one another, the masks came right back on. And I think that there was a sense, and all those events were taking place in the summer. Obviously, the U.S. Open took place in September. There was a sense that, like, golf was doing this right, which you allude to. We're fortunate to have our sport be able to do this. And for all of us who were in the media and the players who were there and everybody who was associated with the events, we felt fortunate to be having this because it wasn't that long before when we didn't know if we were going to have a U.S. Open. We didn't know if the PGA Tour was going to allow media or was going to hold events or we're going to have, you know, all these other things. Certainly a Masters for a while was a little bit up in the air, and then exactly what it was going to look like, we didn't know. So the fact that there are, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan of the pro-ams. I get that they want to build in the revenue. I get that they want to bring in and have the associations with the sponsors who are, you know, in many cases flipping the bill for a lot of these things. They want to keep those relationships going. What's the benefit in the grand scheme of things right now with having a pro-am or having 2,000 or 3,000 people come to, if it's even that many, come to the golf tournament on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or even on a Sunday? To me right now, if it's a time to be careful. It's a time to be overly cautious. I think Jay Monahan and his team have done a pretty good job, but I still don't think that I would be a big fan of that. I was watching some college football games. I watched with my son Oklahoma, Oklahoma State this last weekend, the Bedlam game. Way too many people in the stands where I would have felt comfortable. I wouldn't have gone. I mean, I would have turned around, and as much as exciting as that game was, I wouldn't have gone. When you see Notre Dame, you know, winning against Clemson and people storm the field, we love things like that. It's one of the things that makes sports awesome. I would have freaked out. I would not have been ready to be in a situation like that. And so I guess to bring this sort of long-winded lineup to something of a close here for you, I think that we need to keep doing what we did over the summer as best we can, but I just don't see the need to have the spectators, the pro-ams, that kind of stuff, because I think golf has proven it can work, but we don't need to push it just right now. You know, it's, do you agree? Like it seems like we're trying to live the best of both worlds.
Right. And we haven't seen a player have to miss extended time with terrible symptoms, but I think in a way it when you keep seeing these athletes, when, you know, Dustin Johnson was tested positive just a few weeks before he won the Masters. And we saw mm-hmm. Sergio and Joaquin Neiman have to miss the Masters. I mean, which, it's, you know, and it sounds, that's first world problems, but, you know, horrible for those guys in considering yeah. the, what those events mean to them and potentially to their careers. I just think that, you know, it does stand out. I think in some ways seeing that happen reminds us that, you know, we all have to be careful, because these guys are being, they're trying to be really careful. I mean, I don't think, I'm not sure. I haven't heard what Sergio said yet. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what he said, how he feels about what happened. But I think he probably was pretty devastated. That's, you know, he named his daughter Azalea because he won the Masters. Yeah. That event means so much to him, that was career defining for him to finally win a major, and to have to miss it this year because of COVID. I mean, just shows how big, you know, what we're going through right now in this world is, it's 2020. Let's move on from 2020.
I looked at it, Shoop, as Adam Scott chose to stay in Australia and basically be as safe as he could possibly be for as long as he could be safe, and didn't come to the U.S. to play in the PGA Tour events for several weeks. He was out most of the summer, and he ends up testing positive. I have every reason to believe that he was trying to be as careful as he possibly could. Same thing with Sergio Garcia. I have no idea how those guys contracted the virus. From all I know, it may have been a false positive. It may not. That I didn't hear that they claimed that they thought it was. I mean, none of that matters. But the fact that, you know, these guys who have the means to keep themselves safe still can contract the virus and end up testing positive means that we need to keep, in my mind, keep doing the same things. The numbers that you see, you know, whatever news outlet you choose to get it from, are just staggering. I mean, it's still unbelievable. You know, the fact that we're on average right now of getting 1 million people a week at this point testing positive, and we know that people are traveling for Thanksgiving. We know people will travel for the holidays, through the season and through New Year's, and that's just not good, you know. And that, to me, is the, if I were a PGA pro and I was heading out to Hawaii potentially, if you're then going to go and play the California and the West Coast swing, as great as that is, I think the traveling and is just makes it inherently challenging. I'm sure that's where a lot of guys who end up testing positive, it's, even if you're flying private, even if, like, you have people and you're staying in and you've got a chef who potentially can do that. And there's not as many people as who can do that as I think the people outside the ropes think. Most guys who you see on the PGA Tour are not flying private. They're not having private chefs and personal trainers around. They do a lot more stuff in and amongst, you know, the general public than you would probably think. But the travel is the part that gets to me. It's almost just like you're playing roulette every time you're traveling and doing that stuff. But it'll be interesting. I think that golf is great. I think that we will have a full, rich season unless something really unprecedented takes place. But, dude, who the hell knows? I mean, it's just it's been pretty wild. So what was your impression of RSM? Good event to cover. Did you like it? Obviously, excitement down the stretch there with the playoff.
Yeah, you know, I guess the one takeaway I took from it is, you know, Robert Streb has not been able to keep his card the last few years. Very few, even top 10 finishes. You know, fighting the good fight, regained his card when he went down to Korn Ferry Tour playoffs and finals there. And you know, it just shows any week. And it made me think, the one guy it made me think of was Jordan Spieth. If Robert Streb can find it in 1 week and put four rounds, the guy hadn't shot three rounds in this. He'd only shot three rounds in the 60s in his first 12 rounds of the season, and he shot four in a row in the 60s. I mean, guys, that is the PGA Tour. We've seen it time and time again. A guy missed seven or eight cuts in a row and then win a tournament. I think a James Hahn off the top of my head doing that in Charlotte at Wells Fargo a few years back.
Yep.
It can happen. And so, you know, we're waiting and wondering, when's Jordan going to find it? And I think he looks like he's still got a lot of work to do to get the game in shape, but it can happen in a snap of fingers. And Robert Streb, now he's got two more years and this is his tournament. Both of his wins at the RSM, both in playoffs, and as clutch a shot as you'll ever see in the playoff to, you know, nearly holing it to take down a guy like Kevin Kisner, who incredibly, the guy's 0-5 now in playoffs, but he's such a bulldog. And I love the way he fought back. You know, he knew he needed to go low on Sunday, started five back, and it was really impressive to watch him play.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So going back to Robert Streb, just real quick, looking back at his 2019-20 PGA Tour season, as you mentioned, he had to bounce back and forth between Korn Ferry a little bit and the PGA Tour. On the main tour, he finishes 189th in strokes gained total. He was giving up a little over a full shot. He was a strokes gained negative in every category that they measure, basically, with strokes gained, and that's the one that you and I sort of pay attention to. He's not long off the tee. He's not especially straight. Bad combination. If you're short and crooked on the PGA Tour, you will not be out there for long. But now, the fact that, as you mentioned, that he was able to win, and the next time the guy shows up at Sea Island, he's going to have to be giving strokes to people because he obviously has figured out a golf course that works for him. But to your point, and I like it a lot, if you're a Jordan Spieth fan, seeing Robert Streb figure out a way to win is exactly what you want to see, because he hasn't had it for the last couple of years. And now he's got the two-year exemption. He's going to be playing in April at Augusta. He's got a ticket to the Masters. It helps him immeasurably with his scheduling. For Jordan, it would mean a boost of confidence that I can't even imagine. It would be the validation of the work that you and I both know is going on and has been going on for a long, long time. There's only one more PGA Tour event, full field PGA Tour event left in the season. Mayakoba, I know that Brooks Koepka is in there, but we're pretty much to the end of it. It used to be, right around now, we would get the Skins game, which I personally adored. I don't know about you, Shu, but Thanksgiving for me, when we were growing up, was let's see, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Arnold Palmer, you know, Gary Player, Trevino was in there and did really well. Do you miss the Skins game? I know I sure as hell do. Do you miss it?
I mean, I thought it was great for it in its time, but I think it had run its course. They needed to reinvent it in some way. And, you know, wisely enough, I mean, Phil Mickelson is sort of doing that with the match. This is now the third one, the second time that they've done it on the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is just a perfect time. I mean, the Skins game, part of the magic was that there really wasn't much other sports going on that weekend. And, you know, this is a great spot. I mean, there isn't even a PGA Tour event going on this weekend, so there's no golf to compete against. So I think the match, you know, I don't know how much I really want to watch Charles Barkley and Steph Curry. I'd rather see, you know, Tiger and or maybe have Justin Thomas or some of the young guys. There could be some cool ways to do it. I think ultimately, I don't think they'd ever, you know, I don't think they would do it, but the best way, people would actually really tune in. The ratings would be through the roof if these guys played for their own money. That's what people want to see.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a way that you could bring back the whole Shell's Wonderful World of Golf thing, where we could get some match play, whether it's even for the guy's own money or not, although I love that idea. But if you had, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, if you're able to get A-list pros in A-list venues to play, going back, and you can go up onto YouTube and find all these things, they were sensational. It was thinking way ahead of its time. It would be amazing on some random Monday after some tournament to see, you know, Rory McIlroy play John Rahm, say, for example, at Marion, or to have them go, you know, the week before some event, wherever it happens to be, that you get, you know, Brooks Koepka going up against Dustin Johnson, you know, and they're going to play it at, you know, pick your amazing, fantastic venue. Those things would be fantastic. And I think Phil is opportunistically taking this, and he seems to own it. Do you think people, though, are fired up about this one the way that they were about Phil versus Tiger in Las Vegas, or even last spring, you know, in the midst of COVID, when we had an opportunity to see Tom Brady, Mickelson, you know, and Peyton and Tiger?
Well, small sample size, but I was, you know, just telling a few of my friends that I was going to be doing this interview with Charles Barkley for a Q&A we're going to have on the Golf Week website. And none of my friends had any idea that this was happening, that there was going to be the match three was going to be this weekend. So I don't know. I don't think it's been promoted quite as heavily. And I think just the fact of how little sports was going on back when we had the match two, I mean, that the ratings for that were better than the Masters and US Open and stuff. I mean, it was huge. Yeah. It was one of really the best, you know, live sports on cable television. I mean, you know, I don't remember, maybe ever, pretty high up there. So it's the circumstances have changed. I think there's, you know, even the Masters didn't rate very well this year. So, you know, there were a lot of reasons for that, including football and the early morning tea times and stuff. But again, I don't think is quite as sexy. It's one of those things where, like, you know, I talked to the people at Turner a bit about this, and they're very optimistic because, again, there's not a lot of competition on the sports calendar, but also they said, I thought this was interesting and a valid point, that there's not going to be quite the Black Friday. People aren't going to be running out to the store this year. They'll be buying Excellent stuff point. Online, and they're going to be home, and they're not going to be going out as much, and they're going to be looking for something to watch and do. And, you know, this is going to be fun to watch Charles Barkley hit some really ugly shots, and Phil Mickelson have to play from the desert and all that. And I think Peyton is, you know, he's been phenomenal on Saturday Night Live. I think he's going to be maybe the best trash talker in this group, which is hard to believe given how good Phil and Barkley can be. But I think, you know, I think it's going to be worth watching. I do think I'm going to watch it. I'm sure you're going to watch it, but it'll be interesting to see what those ratings are like.
Can I secretly tell you also one of the reasons why I will definitely watch it? I'm looking forward to hearing Gary McCord. I miss having McCord on TV. I mean, we've gone now, you know, pretty much a year. This was the season where he and Costas were both off of the CVS lineup, and I was always a fan. I realized he was not always everybody's cup of tea, but I will look forward to him and just hearing him. It will make me remember great things and fun golf tournaments from years past. I'm looking forward to that. I agree. In talking with my friends about it, people are not as aware of this one, but the fact that everyone's going to be home this year for Thanksgiving, it's just going to be the four of us at our house here, my wife and I and our kids. And yes, you know, we're not going to be out. We're going to be doing things around the house. And if you're channel surfing and you weren't aware and you happen to stumble upon seeing Phil Mickelson standing there next to Charles Barkley, I think that's enough to stop people from channel surfing, and they're going to check it out. And they could build some momentum through the broadcast. One of the things you mentioned, though, Shoop, at the beginning of that little part there, is that we're in an off week. We hardly ever have off weeks during PGA Tours, the PGA Tour season. Obviously, the schedule is now a wraparound season. We start essentially right after either the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup. The FedEx Cup playoffs culminate in September. And lo and behold, about a week or two later, here we go with the new season. And here we go. Do we need more off weeks? Is that a good thing? Or do you like the way that the mix is right now?
Well, the way you pose it, there's various ways I could take that. But I think the reality is that that Jay Monahan's job as PGA Tour commissioner is to find playing opportunities for his players. And as long as there's sponsors out there that want to put on a tournament, they will go wherever the money is. They're going to play tournaments. They've got TV contracts. And so they are about maximizing those playing opportunities, whether it's for the top guys and giving them these WGCs where they don't have to worry about making a cut and there's big money and lots of world ranking points, or the smaller events like the RSM and Mayakoba that, the Robert Strebs of the world get their chance. They're looking to play as many events as they, so they can squeeze into the top 125. It works. I think it works. The model works. There are some issues, which I'll let you talk about. But the thing I would most like to see, because just from reality, I agree. I know where you're going here, and I agree. Fewer events would probably be better for the PGA Tour as a whole. But in reality, the thing I would like to see that I think could happen if the PGA Tour were to, really their product is fewer 72-hole stroke play events. Let's mix it up. Let's come up with some different formats and so that it's not the same TV show every week.
So, yes, there was definitely some foreshadowing in my asking you the question. The problem that I have is, and I agree, Jay Monahan's not going to shorten up the season. We both know that because, as you correctly point out, one of the biggest jobs that he has is to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to play as much golf as they choose to play. The elite stars are going to set their own schedule. You know, Justin Thomas, based on the fact of his world ranking, the accomplishments he's already got, will be able to pick and choose what events he wants to play to best suit his opportunities, the winning. He's not in it at this point for the money. He has earned that. But there are plenty of players out there who don't have that luxury. So they want to play every opportunity they can, earn as much money as they can, earn as many FedEx Cup points as they can to try to keep moving up the ladder or to go back up the ladder, you know, if they have fallen from where they used to be. I get that. But one of the reasons why growing up, and one of the reasons why I think that even still today, although it's changing a little bit in the digital world, that the Masters was always so compelling and so is there was a scarcity of the coverage. I mean, for a long time, people may not be aware. During broadcast, they never showed the front nine. You know, we only saw the back, as you probably recall that. And now with everything being available digitally and the Masters website basically showing you every shot of every player and you can see the whole thing, scarcity breeds demand in my eye. And there's also the idea of player health. A lot of times guys will feel compelled if the season is really long, and especially with the season we're about to have, hopefully, in calendar year 21, It's a really grueling, tough thing, and we see guys start to break down and guys not have ample time for injury because they feel like they've got to compete, and depending on exactly how they choose to look at it, they do have to compete. If you're an elite player right now, looking ahead to calendar year 2021, which I'm going to stumble saying for the entire year, by the way, you've got the four major championships, whatever FedEx Cup playoff stuff you qualify, the week-to-week PGA Tour events. I don't know, and we can get into the value of the Olympics and what exactly that's going to mean or that's not going to mean, but the Olympics, as of not right now, are on for Tokyo, Japan. That would be August. It's a Ryder Cup year. So you're looking at a stretch from once we get to the West Coast swing where guys are going to play, a couple of events. Maybe they play a couple of events in Florida, they get the Players Championship through the Florida swing, and then we're off. You know, you get the Players, you get the Masters, you get the PGA Championship, and every 4 or 5 weeks, there's a really significant big-time event, as well as the WGCs and everything else. I worry that we're cramming the schedule so much and not incorporating off weeks that I'm worried that elite star players will end up getting fatigue and getting overuse injuries, and that the Brooks Koepka type injuries that we've seen, the Tiger Woods injuries, I'm not even talking about that, because that's over 20 years, 30 years. I think that you're bringing on potentially more injuries to your stars, and that's not good. I want to protect everybody, especially the most elite players, from getting injured, because that's what drives interest. That's what gets people fired up about it. So, I realize it's not going to happen. It's a pipe dream. But I think scheduling a somewhat longer break, or more numerically more off weeks, would be a good thing. And part of me is like, hey, look, if you want to get more playing opportunities, play better. You know what? If you win, all the stuff gets taken care of. I'm not worried about, you know, with all due respect, at this point, you know, a lot of these guys who have lower world rankings and whatever, it's not, you know, at this point, my real big concern where they are and how many playing opportunities somebody like Mark Hubbard or somebody like Scott Piercy, you know, is going to have. I mean, the answer to that, to giving yourself more and better playing opportunities, play better. And then it all gets taken care of. So I will now step off of my soapbox here atop Mount Pius and join everybody else. So one last thing. I was listening to the broadcast at the Masters. You were there, so you would not have been, you lucky guy. Ricky Fowler is going to be celebrating a birthday in about 2 weeks. Ricky is going to be turning 32, which makes me feel very, very old, by the way. His official world golf ranking right now is 48. Ricky's in a precarious position, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of qualifying for the Masters. Like, he needs to sort of stay around top 50 at the end of the year, get in top 50 official world golf ranking as of a cutoff point. We'll also get him in a win. We'll get him in. But 48, sort of, you're now living on the bubble with that. Ricky Fowler did not have a top 10 after his tie for 10th at the Amex back in January of 2000. And it's now been 6 years since his amazing 2014 season, where he top fived in all four of that season's major championships. Is the window of opportunity for Ricky Fowler closing up? Do you think that it's maybe not going to happen, or do you still think that that Ricky Fowler has got a major in him?
That's a really good question. There's no doubt that he's not been playing well the past year, and he's been working on swing changes. He changed coaches. He's with John Tillery now. He had been with Butch Harmon for a long time, but Butch isn't on the road these days. And I remember when I did, you know, the Q&A back earlier this year with Brandel Chamblee, where I thought Brandel made a pretty fair point. It's like, you work so well with Butch, just make the extra effort and fly out and see him. Like, you know, it's a little more work, but go see him. He's Butch. He's made you as good as you are. He's contributed a lot to your success. And you know, I don't want to question Ricky's work ethic, but I don't think he's doing what Bryson's doing. I don't think he's working that hard. And I, you know, I think also, you know, he got married around this time last year, and that's a big adjustment. I think this has just been a strange year. I don't want to read too much into this year. And, you know, we usually think of, like, he's reaching that sweet spot, usually 32, 34. I mean, Phil didn't win a major till 34. So I don't think the clock is, I don't think he's getting passed by, but there are a lot of good young players. I mean, he might not be the best player on the PGA Tour that you think of anymore out of Oklahoma State, the way Matt Wolf and Victor Hovland are playing. And so are newer, younger players that are coming out that are playing way better than he is right now. I still think he's got one of the best putting, maybe the best putting stroke in golf. And so that always means he's going to be in good shape if he can putt well. I don't think, like you mentioned, he did not putt as well this year. So he's got to work on his putting as well. He even went cross-handed for a little bit in Detroit earlier this summer. So, you know, I think he needs, he should be taking whatever off season he has and really grinding. I want to see him work hard and be, you know, as serious as possible. Maybe do a few less commercials. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying he needs to be working out as much as Bryson, but I think, I think he could take his effort level maybe next level for him and say that I'm going to spend these next couple of years, because there's a lot of, I mean, listen, hearing DJ say he wants to do this, he's going to work hard the next 8 to 10 years. You know, they're guys that really want it, that want to add to their major total. And I think Ricky, if he doesn't get one, that's going to be that's going to be something he's going to regret if he's always has the fact that, you know, yes, he won the Players and he's shown that he can do it on Sunday. I don't doubt mm-hmm. that he has it in him. And, you know, I think what the experience of the 2018 Masters, where he almost, you know, came from behind and had a chance on Sunday, but Patrick Reed was still a little too tough. I think that was another big learning experience of being there on Sunday. But, you know, he is still has too many doubles and triples in major championships, and you just can't. You're not going to win a title doing that.
My biggest concern. So, the idea for this question, what got me sort of thinking along these lines, is that Klay Thompson just got injured, and it looks like he's going to be out for the Golden State Warriors for the entire basketball season that's about to begin here in another, you know, month or two. And what I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and he was talking with his guest about how the window for that team, which to win a championship, would seem to be closing with that injury. They went through that great run. They win multiple NBA titles. They get a ton of injuries. Kevin Durant obviously getting hurt, Klay Thompson getting hurt, Draymond Green getting older, all these different things. In his opinion, you know, it's realistic to think that they may not be able to win another championship given the competition that they've got. I look at the way that golf is changing, the way that players are coming up, the younger players who are playing at a very high level really quickly. You mentioned Matthew Wolf. Colin Morikawa, within basically his first full year of being on the PGA Tour, wins multiple times, including a PGA Championship. And with the power game going the way it's going, when you get more and more guys experimenting with longer drivers to get more distance, when you get somebody like Bryson DeChambeau, who's being as influential as he is, Dustin Johnson evidently tinkering around with longer drivers before but not going with it at the Masters, everybody's sort of focusing on the development and the next steps in the power game. That is not what Ricky does well. As you mentioned, I agree. He's one of the best putters out there. He didn't have an especially good putting year last season. He tinkered around with his stroke. He tinkered around with different putters. He was searching. But Ricky's average driving distance last year on the PGA Tour was 294. He ranked him 119th. He's not a bomber. You know, I'd love to be able to knock it that far, but by PGA Tour standards, he's not a bomber. Now, unlike the aforementioned Robert Streb, he is accurate. He ranked 35th in driving accuracy. But my worry or my concern, if you're a Ricky Fowler fan, is that the game is moving stylistically into a certain direction, and it's not what he essentially does well. So that means that there's a couple of choices. You can look at this year that we just finished as being something of an anomaly. And you mentioned some very good reasons why maybe we should do that. Oh, yeah, by the way, there was a pandemic going on, so everybody's schedule gets very disjointed. We're thinking about other things other than golf. He got married. I don't know if his wife and he are thinking about or are in the process of trying to start a family. All these very legitimate things that would take you away from focusing on your job, in his case, playing good golf. But it is concerning to me when it's like been 6 years since he would seem to have been peaking. And we thought like, oh, this is a guy who got a top five in each one of the four major championships. He was then the what we see right now with, for example, like Xander Schauffele. The game is so good all the way around. Lovely short game. Hits fairways. Good iron player. Popular in the locker room. You know, a win is always universally liked. And I'm not knocking the guy, but as one of the faces of the PGA Tour, there's work, as you're saying, there's work that needs to be done here. I'm like, we've got to shore up some shortcomings to get Ricky Fowler back to the place where I think we all just assume he is, but he wasn't in 2020 and all that. It's if he's going to win a major, which one do you think sets up best for him? Is he a U.S. Open guy in your mind? Is he a Masters guy in your mind? Because I'm trying to think about like where I would put him. And I'm not sure. His game doesn't readily, in my opinion, match up with any of the four majors. But what do you think?
Well, I was just thinking of the year ahead, and I don't like him at Torrey Pines at all. It's just, right. I think a bomber is going to win there.
Too maybe big.
Like DJ or Bryson would jump to the top of my list. Even Gary Winland, who's already won a US Open, has had a lot of success at that course. But I was thinking Kiowa for the PGA might be his best chance in the year to come. He's good playing in the wind. I don't think distance is the key to that golf course. And, Rory won there, so maybe, distance is, certainly helps. But I think that's a course where if the wind blows, it could work into his favor. And that's the major I like him at. He's played well. He's had some opportunities, I think, in the Open Championship, and maybe that could be a spot for him. But of the ones on the, next year's potentially, I like Kiowa for Ricky. And I think what you said, it makes a lot of sense that, he's not one of those names that's jumping to mind as a pick in the majors right now. There's just too many other younger players that are playing better than him. And, he wasn't even brought into the media center for the Masters when they before the tournament, because he's, I guess, just not considered one of the real contenders at the moment. And I think he needs to do something about that. If he's off doing a photo shoot while Bryson's in the gym, working hard, try to get better to gain distance. And so are a lot of other players.
He's not the only one.
Talent will only take you so far. You gotta work to win these majors. There's a lot of effort. I mean, I think you look at Dustin Johnson. I think he coasted on his talent and got his one win a year for a while, but then he decided he really wanted to win a major, and he worked hard on getting his wedge game better. And nobody really talked about it, but his bunker game used to be pathetic, and really, it's now really good. And
good.
I think one of the defining moments for him was after he chunked it in the bunker at two, he got it up and down and still saved par. It still felt like he lost a stroke there, but it didn't become a disaster. It could have been a disaster there if he makes six or worse.
So I agree that he could do I think a PGA championship might be the place where Ricky Fowler has his best opportunity to win a major championship, because I don't think that he's long enough. We've now established that the Masters in Augusta National, as it stands today, is just a bomber's paradise. Like, you got to really move the golf ball out there, and I just don't think that he does as much. I think he putts the way that you would need to win a Masters, but I don't know that he gives himself as many opportunities. I don't think Torrey Pines sets up well for him at all. I think that's a big, brawny golf course, as you talked about. I love him to win at a place, for example, though, like Royal St. George, if he does put in the work and if he's sort of trending up there. I was at Royal St. George back in 2011 when Darren Clarke, comes out of nowhere and beats the aforementioned Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson. And Ricky Fowler ends up tied for fifth with, this is a beauty, he tied for fifth that year with Chad Campbell and Anthony Kim. Where have those guys gone? And the reason why I remember it so vividly is I followed Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy. I believe it was on Friday in the second round. It might have been Saturday, but I think it was Friday. And it was raining sideways. It was a proper howler of a day. And Ricky is out there in a white rain suit. And I'm like, there's a guy who doesn't do his own laundry. I mean, if you're going to be playing a British Open in a white rain suit, and he was looking like a drowned rat. It was so wet, and Rory was miserable, not playing. Fowler loved it. He loved it. He was so happy to be out there grinding away, and there weren't that many media people out there because they had a lot more sanity than I did. But I walked like 8 or 9 holes with those guys, and there was this grin on his face. And then there were certain points where like the wind is lashing, and they're trying to hit shots, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, like any sane person would have walked off. He loved it. I think Fowler is one of those guys that loves links golf a lot, but doesn't have the opportunity to show it or to demonstrate it all that often. If he's not on form when the British Open happens to roll around on the schedule, you wouldn't see it. But I think that he really likes it. There's so many guys, though. The depth of the quality on the PGA Tour right now, the depth of the quality around the world. I mean, you just start going up and down the top 15, top 20. Ricky's game is nowhere near where DJ is right now, or Rahm, Justin Thomas. Even if he's been off, we saw enough from Rory McIlroy at the Masters to make me think that 21 will be a better year for him than than what we saw post-COVID shutdown. I think that he's back. Xander Schauffele, we saw a lot this year from Patrick Cantlay. We didn't see much from Brooks, but Daniel Berger went from 154 in the world a year ago to 13. Matt Wolf is coming up. All these other guys, Sungjae Im being super, super impressive. There are so many good guys that he has to play as well or better than if he's going to contend at a major that, yeah, it just sort of makes my head scratch. So where is the tee time? Where are you going to be playing on Thursday for Thanksgiving morning?
Just right outside my backyard, basically. Going to play Sawgrass Country Club with the wife.
Bastard. It's I woke up this morning and the thermometer said 28 degrees. It's wonderful and sunny. It looks great. And then you go outside and you're like, yep, we're pretty much shut down here until at least March. So it's going to be indoor golf simulators. There's a nice one that's in my area not too far away. Putting in my home office. I've got that all set up. But yeah, send me a picture of what it looks like to be warm out there. Shoop,
I have endured. A great Thanksgiving. I have endured for that. This is my time. This is my time when the weather is money.
this is your time. You have earned this by going through Florida summers. Have a very happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for once again coming up on the Forward Press.
All right. Always a pleasure.